good evening. Usually saying good afternoon, good evening. I'm Dan Gibbons from the City Club of Chicago, and on behalf of our Board of Governors, including the one and only Rufus Williams. Thank you, Rufus, for all the good that you do. On behalf of our board, welcome to City Club. Thank you especially to our partners today, and really many days over the course of a year, the Chicago Community Trust, and of course the MacArthur Foundation. So great to have you all in this room as a partnership, and this is a great example of what some of the new things that City Club is doing. Juan Salgado is here from the City Colleges. David Griesing is here from the Better Government Association. We just have such a great group, and this is what we do. And Joe Ferguson, Civic. We're bringing all these different groups together, and bringing these different all sorts of sectors and philanthropic and government and you name it. We're coming together to have some of the right conversations and elevate all the great things that you all are doing. So as you can see, we're not having lunch at Maggiano's, but we do love experimenting. Where's the chicken? Sorry, Andrea. Maybe we have some lemon cookies, but that is intentional, and we do like to experiment. So here we are at the experimental station, which I hope everyone gets a chance, if you haven't already, to check it out. And actually, before we really get started, I'd like to introduce the co-founder and the executive director of the experimental station to share a few more things about this wonderful space. So please welcome Connie Spring. Thank you, Connie. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for being here. Again, I'm Connie Spreen. I'm the a co-founder and executive director of Experimental Station, and I just want to thank you all for being here. We are truly honored. You know, we're way down here on the south side, and a lot of people get lost trying to find us, so we hope that you did not get too lost getting down here. So in addition to, you know, you'll hear about the work that we do and the support, I should say, that we give to journalistic enterprises, and we have done so since the very beginning of Experimental Station, largely because we believe really strongly in the importance of local journalism for just protecting our civil liberties, but also, you know, it's the foundation of democracy, if you read Tocqueville. Mm-hmm. And it is crucial to our democratic system. So in addition to the support for local journalism, we also do a lot of work around food access. And if you have an opportunity before you go to check out some of the materials that we produce, one of the things that we do, we have a farmers market that we started in 2008, and it runs every Saturday, 9 to 2, so we hope that you will come back for it. It is the best market in the city of Chicago. And we were the initiators in the state of Illinois of a program where we match links, or what is called SNAP, or formerly called food stamps. And so we were one of the first markets making an effort for local folks in our community to be able to afford the foods at our market. And we started in 2009 matching those SNAP benefits or link benefits. And we do now that for the entire state of Illinois. So it's turned into quite an amazing, wonderful program. And we also work with youth and do a lot of youth education. So, you know, please take an opportunity if you have a chance to, you know, talk to me, talk to our other staff, Corey Chapman, who's here somewhere. He's actually out at the moment recouping my cell phone, which I put on someone's car only a few minutes ago. So I hope to have that back. But again, welcome to Experimental Station. We are truly honored that you're here, and I wish you a pleasant time here. Thank you.
Connie, thank you for welcoming us here. And a special thanks to Corey, who's out very busy. he's been. Thank you, Corey, and your whole team. I know you've all done a lot of work to get us here today and make this a reality. So just a reminder, if you have any questions, we are at City Club. We always welcome questions. There will be some Q&A at the end. There's a table over there with these blue cards. So either we can either pass them down or raise your hand or grab a paper, blue piece of paper to write your question out, and we'll get it answered up here. And don't hold back, because we've got some amazing people here today that you're going to hear from, including two recent Pulitzer Prize winners. How cool is that? Can't wait to hear from them, from our panel, and from you all. We love questions, as Sylvia Ewing knows. We love questions. We love this conversation. Keep it going. So please think of some of those questions. Get them on up, because you got some amazing people here to hear from. And one of my most amazing City Club participants and friends of ours is going to kick us off today. So to open today's program, please welcome a great partner and a great civic leader. We're so fortunate to have here in Chicago the president and the CEO of Chicago Community Trust, Andrea Sands. Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan, and thank you, Connie, for joining forces and allowing us to come together in this beautiful space. What an incredible day. Thank you all for coming. Thank you for spending time together with us this afternoon. We are in Chicago pretty lucky for lots of reasons. I won't go into all of them because I could stand here all day. But one of the things that we're really fortunate to have is a very robust and dynamic news ecosystem. As Dan mentioned, Pulitzer Prize winners galore in our city and amongst us today. But one of the things that is a challenge here, just as it is everywhere in the world right now, is that those news organizations haven't yet settled on a business model, a revenue model, that allows them to sustain their operations, to grow, and to give us all the news and information, frankly, we deserve and that our democracy requires. So we are thrilled to be in partnership with many of you in the room, with the MacArthur Foundation and with others, to try to contribute in some way to solving that challenge, and to doing so in a way that is inclusive, that brings everybody to the table, whose voice needs to be heard, and whose perspective is really critical to our democracy, and doing so in a way that leads the way for our nation and maybe beyond. We are very competitive here in Chicago. I am now a true Chicagoan in that I want to be the best, and I want to be leading the charge, and we really are. We hope that all of you are inspired by what you learned today to just roll up your sleeves with us and help create a news environment in Chicago that demonstrates that credible news, great information, information that both informs us and sustains our democracy, but that also represents the beauty, the complexity, the diversity of our city in a deep and authentic way, is sustainable, is worth investing in, is something that we can all be a part of. So big, big, big aspirations here. We are launching today in a celebratory fashion because we are celebrating the first 13 grant recipients of Press Forward Chicago. I think you can see them all here on the screen. We were thrilled to be able to support these organizations. Many are in the room today, and we look forward to continuing to partner with them as they then, you know, grow together as a cohort of organizations that we can all learn from, learn with, and that can learn from one another. I am now going to skip to the meat of today's topic. We are really thrilled to hear today's perspectives, and to do so, as I said, in a way that nourishes our understanding of the current state of affairs in Chicago's news ecosystem, which is one about which we can have a lot of pride, and one that really raises a lot of questions about what the future of news holds. We hope to be able to help shape it together. And so now I'm just thrilled to call up to the podium to introduce the panel, great partner and friend, John Palfrey from MacArthur Foundation. about Press Forward before you hear from John. Sorry about that. Thanks for understanding, everyone.
Our job as journalists is to tell the truth. That's become increasingly difficult and increasingly important in the era we're in.
When local news disappears, when it dissipates, people lose access to credible information that helps democracy run and thrive.
People have a right to know what is happening in their community. People have a right to know what are the decisions that local electeds are making. And not only that, like, people deserve to have opportunities to actually, like, become engaged and be their own, you know, storytellers and their own reporters.
If there was ever a time to be able to get down to those frontline communities and equip them with the tools to be able to tell their story, like, it's now.
Press Forward is an opportunity to collaborate across the city with all of the wonderful organizations that provide news and information. We want to see that network of news organizations grow and flourish in Chicago.
One manifestation of the state of the industry is the phenomenon of news deserts. I'm Deborah Douglas, and I'm the director of the newly created Medill Midwest Solutions Journalism Hub. So communities don't have access to credible information that connects them to the civic infrastructure that allows them to make good decisions.
I think it's so important to be able to invest in the places where people are moving to, where there's even less of an infrastructure and where local governments are used to operating in secrecy without anybody really asking any questions.
Mi nombre es Irene Rómulo. Yo formo parte de Cicero Independiente. Nosotros somos una organización de noticias bilingüe aquí ubicada en Cicero y nos enfocamos en proveer recursos e información para la gente que vive aquí y entrenamiento para personas que están interesadas en involucrarse en el periodismo local.
Right now we publish online, usually weekly in both Spanish and English, and we also do quarterly print editions because we know that not everybody who lives here in Cicero has access to the internet or knows how to get information just off of social media or online. When we start asking questions, when we start showing up to local board meetings and recording them for people to see, they don't necessarily like that, and they've actually placed a lot of barriers to us getting information.
We do encounter resistance. A lot of people don't want the truth to come out. They don't want to talk to you. And that includes, most notably, people in positions of power. And it's our job to sometimes confront them respectfully, but to really ask questions that the public needs to know. My name is Mick Dunkey. I'm an editor and reporter for Block Club Chicago. You know, a lot of places don't have any news coverage. Here in Chicago, we're really lucky that we have such a wide range of news outlets. Journalism isn't free. All the stuff I've been talking about telling the truth, gathering the information, making sure we have it right, that takes time. It takes people.
You can't just live in a rarefied space and think that the things that happen to other people will never happen to you.
Look, we are right situated right now in the only state park in the city limits. This is William Powers. And the reason why we're here is because this little lagoon, before this water reaches Wolf Lake behind me, it comes from the Calumet River, and it has to pass through one of the most polluted parts of my neighborhood called the Shroud Site. I'm Olga Bautista. I'm the executive director of the Southeast Environmental Task Force here in the Hagwish neighborhood in the far southeast side of Chicago. But we had this huge fight to stop the relocation of a metal shredder from the Lincoln Park neighborhood to our neighborhood here on the southeast side. It took a hunger strike going on during a global pandemic, during racial uprisings. Having the coverage that we had during that time was so important for us to be able to win this campaign. Getting our stories out into the media was what actually won us the campaign.
More resources would enhance the quality of journalism that we're able to provide. It would allow us to do more with technology, deeper dives, and data. There are so many untapped ideas, but we just don't have time and resources to actually engage that can really make a difference in how people interface with the information that we're serving.
Local news is essential to our democracy. What it needs is more support from those of us in the philanthropic community, from those of us who are readers and listeners and viewers. I'm John Palfrey. I'm president of the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation here in Chicago.
Andrea Sines, I'm president and CEO of the Chicago Community Trust. We have all the ingredients of what the future of news might be like. We should invest in that experiment and grow it so that we can learn together what a robust diverse news ecosystem can create, and I think it will be better.
Join Press Forward. This is an invitation. You can contribute alongside us in this fund that supports local news and our democracy here in Chicago, and we're going to make a difference together.
Good afternoon, everybody. And that was a fundraising video, if you didn't notice it. We are raising money for everybody here who is doing amazing work. And if you haven't given, give them money. I'm John Palfrey, president of the MacArthur Foundation. Couldn't be more honored to say a few words of welcome and then get off the stage, because we have the most amazing panel here. Let me please reiterate the thanks to Experimental Station, to Connie and Corey, to the City Club, to Dan and Amanda and team. We were approached about saying, would we do something for Press Forward at City Club? As a proud City Club member, I said, absolutely, let's do it. But a couple of rules. One is, you want to hear from me as little as possible. We're going to put on the table some amazing information from people who are not me. And second was, we're not doing it at Maggiano's. I love Maggiano's. That is a fabulous pasta. But we are going to do it where it's really happening. And we were so thrilled that Experimental Station is our home for today. I just briefly want to put this effort into a national and international context, and then to hear more about Chicago. So a year ago, a bunch of us had an idea that it would be good to raise more money for local news. And I'm not going to talk about the crisis we are in. We're going to talk about solutions, opportunities, the awesome stuff. A year ago, though, there were zero donors to Press Forward. Last September, we were up to 22 donors and $500 million nationally. $500 million raised nationally. Today, there are 61 donors to Press Forward across this country, and my goal is to have more than our fair share of that money land in Chicago. That's the game plan. And the way we're doing that, in part, is through Press Forward Chicago. The effort here to raise money, that's a $10 million fund right now. We'd like it to be more. But the most important thing, more important than the dollars and the money and so forth, although that is important, it really is to prove that Chicago can be the news oasis of this country when we're talking about news deserts. People are talking about news deserts. I don't want to talk about news deserts. Let's talk about the places where it's really happening, and that is right here, and not at Maggiano's. It's happening right here at Experimental Stations. Again, no disrespect. I love Maggiano's. Truly, I do. But the point being that what is occurring in this building and in other buildings on the south side, on the west side, throughout our city in 77 neighborhoods in Cicero next door and so forth is a really important national story. It is showing what is possible if we have an abundance mindset, if we say we are going to fund this properly, if we are going to invest in this philanthropically by subscribing, doing all the things that's not happening across the country. We're going to do it in Chicago, and we're going to show what happens. And what happens is that a 10-person organization right here wins two, not one, two Pulitzer Prizes. That's what happens, right? That is an unbelievable thing. And that's usually what, like, New York Times has hundreds of millions of dollars a year, but it was, I don't think that exactly hundreds of millions of dollars is the budget that it, no? I don't think Invisible Institute has quite that. We're enthusiastic supporters, but not that level. And is there anybody in the building who's celebrating a sixth birthday today? Is there any sixth birthday celebrators? Yes, Block Club Chicago is six today. Incredible, incredible national model. We could go on and on. We're about to hear more from an incredible group of people who are showing what it means to have a national model right here in Chicago. And I hope that whatever your role is, City Club member with a big pocketbook, or you are somebody who has been for many years making it happen on the ground in Chicago in whatever your field is, or you're one of the people who are redefining what local news can be in America, we need to link arms and make this the most amazing story we possibly can right here in Chicago. And Olivia Obinema, I think, is going to come up and lead an amazing panel. I am not going to introduce the panel because they're going to do that. I learned, Olivia, in the research for talking about public narrative, that it was started with a grant from the MacArthur Foundation some years ago, and we could not be more proud that decades later, here we are celebrating together. Olivia, please bring in the panel, and thank you so much.
Do you want to stay here? Thank you so much, John, Andrea. Thank you to the to everyone that was able to put all of this together and gather us busy folks to come on board and talk to you all about new sustainability. I will sit down soon. I can't believe actually this is a little bit too short for me. but can you raise your hands if you have more than $1 million? Okay, I try to get money for y'all. Didn't work out. I might point to some people because I know they have money. But no, I thank you all for being here. I'll just say this, you know, local journalism is the lifeblood of democracy. There are so many folks on the ground that not only have experienced challenges and barriers in their lives, but have taken that as fuel for fire to be in this industry, to address concerns and challenges and issues that not only they share with their neighbors, but that they know there's so many more people out there that are dealing with. And so, you know, I'm really lucky to be a part of an industry that has people who have experiences that we are trying to also cover, that we are trying to also expand its reach on, and more importantly, that we're trying to get funding for to build more accessibility to that information that gives us those solutions that change and that hopefully allows us to build on policy and make actual impact. I have a fine panel here that in all of their backgrounds have done just that in providing impact in their own way, in their own newsrooms, in their own organizations. So I will not be addressing at length their bios. You can find their bios on the website. We have a very short time to discuss a very important topic, and I want to make sure that we also make time for questions from the audience. So let's get started. I do just want to give out some names here. So you put some names to faces. Just wave for us. We have Sarah Conway, who is a senior reporter at City Bureau and a Pulitzer Prize winner. We also have Trina Reynolds Tyler, who is the director of data at Invisible Institute, also a Pulitzer Prize winner.
Do I need this?
Ooh!
Okay, here we go. I was feeling confined.
That's better.
Yeah, it's better, right? I feel free.
Yes.
Thank you. Wonderful. Thanks, Mackenzie. We have Jacqueline, a.k.a. Jackie Serrato, the EIC of Southside Weekly. We have Mackenzie Warren, who is the director of the Local News Accelerator at Northwestern. And thank you for joining us. Mackenzie, because we're talking about money, I have to start off with you. There is...
You must know something I don't know.
I know a lot of things. But... Northwestern, the local news initiative, came out with a recent report around news coverage here and news consumption here in Chicago. Let's talk about money. What are some of the findings that stand out in this report? And what does it mean, or at least what is the state of our financial health according to this report?
Well, let me start out with answering the second question first. The state of our financial health in the eyes of consumers.
Yeah.
We surveyed 1,000 people in the 14 counties that comprise the Chicago metro area, running from Kenosha to Gary, all the way out to DuPage, Will, Grundy, McHenry. 71% of those people who we surveyed believe that the local news industry is doing either well or very well financially. Now, I don't know about you, but that doesn't seem to square with my experience or with the experience of any journalist I've ever met. In Illinois, we have lost 85% of the journalism jobs since 2004.
Wow.
Half of those are here in the Chicagoland area. So does that show you that there's maybe a disconnect between how consumers of our product, our cause, our religion, how do they think that we're doing? And are we going to be there for very long? We heard Andrea talking about the birthright of democracy is founded on free and open information. Connie said similar things. Well, it's not there if it's not paid for, just like any other product of value. So I think, you know, I have a lot of good messages that I think come out of the survey as well, but that was the second question you asked me. Now, to the first question, and I think this is something that we should look at both as full of hope and full of pessimism. We have to figure out which we're going to make of it. 19% of people in the Chicagoland area are willing to pay for local news. So now we might think 19% is a small number. Do you think it's a small number?
Now, see, I'm the one asking the questions.
All right.
But sure, yeah, it's a small number. I'm not the hot seat. You're
in
the hot seat.
We said 19% of people showed up to vote, up, would say that would be
a small number.
Right. So, yeah. But
I play along.
We've got around about 10 million people who live in the Chicago metro area. So 19% of that adds up to about 2 million people. Well, if those 2 million people paid an average of $10 a month for their local media, their local news, that's $250 million industry. And if we were a startup, that'd be pretty damn good, right? We'd have $250 million in the pipeline. We'd have a robust customer list that we've been doing business with for decades. We'd have trusted B2B relationships with all of our clients. We'd have positive cash flow. We'd have widespread brand recognition. That's actually a position of strength from which to be operating. So if you're an investor and you're thinking about, should I be putting my money in the local news ecosystem, I'd say we're a great place to place a bet. Now, do we need to make some changes in our operating model? You bet we do. Our content is great. Our packaging and distribution, which was long a huge advantage of ours, is lousy. It's frail. It's out of date. It's stale. It's weak. The good news is you can change your manufacturing, packaging, and distribution a lot faster and better than you can change your content. Content is king. It always has been. It always will be. That's what people are paying for. So we need to sort out the delivery mechanisms to make good on that, the promise of those 19% of people who are still willing to invest in us.
And, you know, it is way faster to change the distribution, the processes. It is also expensive, right, to do that work. Jackie, as, you know, editor-in-chief of Southside Weekly, you know, you've had to make a lot of different decisions when it comes to what your newsroom gets to put out for its readership and how that affects the bottom line. You know, what kind of strategies, take me through the plan here, what kind of strategies do you guys instill to kind of balance that out and be as resourceful as Southside Weekly has been?
Well, I don't know how familiar everybody is with Southside Weekly, but for the first practically 10 years of our existence, we were a volunteer paper. It's not an ideal model, right? Because everybody should get paid, reporters should get paid, editors, photographers, etc. But, you know, it started off as a student-led newspaper independently from the University of Chicago, and since then has grown and evolved to become much more representative of the Southside. You know, but still, in those first 10 years, we managed to put out really groundbreaking work, but we were relying, you know, on the passion and ultimately free labor of so many people who wanted to, who were interested in journalism, wanted to explore what it meant to contribute to a newspaper. But at the end of the day, it was not sustainable. One of the great things of having a volunteer paper, though, was that we had more hands on deck. People were coming in and out, trying new things, experimenting, seeing whether they like to write or whether they like to edit, or learning even how to collect data and do data analysis, right? There were many, many aspects of the work that we were doing that were of interest to a lot of people. However, even, you know, after we had developed a lot of people in the field of journalism, we ended up losing them. It was hard to retain them. So there's actually plenty of very prominent news outlets in Chicago that have somebody in their team who comes from Southside Weekly, mm-hmm. right? So we knew that we had to become more sustainable. We were very much relying on advertisement dollars, individual donations, right? But there's only so far you can get with that. So lately, you know, we've had more philanthropic support, and that's been great because we have recently transitioned from being a volunteer paper to being a paid paper. We are now paying everyone. So we are very proud of that. But, you know, that also means that we are relying with a smaller contributor base. And, you know, we want to pay people. We want to produce content that is reflective of Southside communities. We want to pay a living wage. But that does mean that we are going to need continued support from philanthropy. We are going to need more individual donations, more subscriptions, selling more merchandise. We have to have a diverse sources of revenue, basically. So we're figuring it out. We merged with a local community paper called the Hyde Park Herald. They're the oldest community paper in Chicago. So, you know, we're finding ways to make our operations more efficient and to get more support and more readers and more distribution on the South Side. So I don't exactly have like the solution for what the model should be, but we've tried many things, you know, from being a volunteer paper to now trying to find diverse sources, and we just need your support.
Money. I hope you hear money so many times throughout this conversation. No, but seriously, I hope you hear money so many times throughout the conversation. And those of you that can give, give to this initiative as it impacts so many and helps us get to this goal of being a sustainable news oasis. Jackie, thank you. Trina, Sarah, congratulations again on becoming Pulitzer Prize winners. And in the midst of all this celebration, of course, of being recognized for, you know, such enduring work, it came with a lot of challenges. Can you tell us about, you know, what it took to put together this enormous and painstakingly, I think, hard investigation about missing girls and women in Chicago?
Thank you so much. So to start us off, I feel like I want to take us back years when Sarah and I first met, mm-hmm. Back when I started as an AmeriCorps member at the Invisible Institute. I think I started in 2016. I think I met Sarah 2017. Mm-hmm. I remember back when Southside Weekly's floors were being redone by Myra and Harry, like they were like on their knees. And it really is. And I remember when Harry Backlund and Daryl Holiday were in the Invisible Institute team meetings. And so the space has really been about collaboration from the very beginning. But when I started at the Invisible Institute, I was primarily doing outreach for the Citizens Police Data Project, but I was particularly interested in sexual violations by police. We had the Citizens Police Data Project. There's this issue with primary categorization, which means if you see one complaint, you might not see all of the allegations attached to it. All that's to say, it led me down the path of going to graduate school at UChicago, getting my master's in public policy, and pursuing a machine learning project called Beneath the Surface, where we parse through narrative text from police misconduct records in order to identify other types of context of police violence that folks are not necessarily talking about. In that project, you know, led over 200 volunteers to generate training data, which labeled police misconduct records as relevant or not relevant using the binary system, but also did a lot of community engagement, which ultimately led to this cluster of complaints related to missing persons cases. Many people, meaning primarily Black mothers, talking about their Black children, naming frustrations they had with the way that Chicago police handled their missing persons cases. A DCFS worker saying, a law enforcement prematurely close a missing persons case. And so in June 2021, reached out to Sarah Conway here, who I met through City Bureau when we were all still in the same building. And I said, you know, let's get together. I think that's when we first joined, went to the March for Missing and Murdered Women and Girls. So it's been a collaboration of some pre-reporting for about a year, but then some like full-time reporting that started at the top of 2023.
Yeah, and it's interesting being in this room because my own journalism career really started here, literally in the corner over there. Bettina Chang, who used to be with City Bureau, had a table. I had gone to City Bureau's public newsroom that was held in this room, really hoping to get into the journalism industry. And both of our newsrooms have always been rooted in involving Chicagoans, oftentimes impacted people in making the news itself. Helping people understand their information needs and driving them towards it. So when Trina approached me, I had known Trina from mutual aid, food distribution. I had seen her at Invisible Institute. You know, I knew the work that Invisible Institute had done and the character with which they do it. And so it was such an obvious yes to work together in collaboration on this project.
So to the challenges, okay, because there were many, right? Because at the top of the project, I had pulled missing persons records for some years. Like, I started 2019 just, like, looking at open cases, and I had been FOIAing. But we had all of this data, mm-hmm. but we hadn't spoken to people, right? So there's, over the past 2 decades, you know, over 300,000 cases. And then we FOIAed for a bunch of the same records to see if they had been leaving out records, because they do. Mm-hmm. You know, we had to talk to people in order to validate that information, right? Like I said earlier, when you're looking at large data, and I know we're entering that digital world, we're talking about AI and news, you know, it's really important that we bring it back to the source, right? The person who was the reason for the creation, the generation of that data point. And once we began talking to people, we began to see massive, you know, gaps in what was being reported versus what was reality. And so that first challenge really was talking to people.
Yeah. And I think what made our investigation special was at the heart of it. It was impacted people in community. We were always thinking about them. People's experience really drove how we investigated over 1 million records and data points. And we were thinking about them both in terms of mitigating harm. Trina and I came together because we have for our lives really been devoted our work to survivors of domestic violence. And so we knew inherently starting this work that gender-based violence was a really big part of the missing persons crisis in Chicago, and it disproportionately impacts Black women. And so when we were doing reporting and going through records, we also knew ultimately that we didn't just want to publish an investigation that lived on a website or was in print. We wanted to make sure that we had events that were specifically tailored for survivors. We knew that we wanted to have events for the public where people could engage with our reporting and actually process it, because it was very heavy. And we knew we wanted to have events where we would ultimately have survivors and audience members actually interact with one another in a way that's not exploitative.
Yeah. I mean, and just to wrap up this question is, like, just coming back to something Mackenzie shared with us earlier, which is that what Families Voices, the part 7 of Missing in Chicago, which Mackenzie has given the advice to listen to it instead of reading it, because it is in our voice. But it really, you know, we really fiercely convinced our editors, our teams, that this kind of narrative portion was extremely important, because we didn't want to, you know, it was important for us to interrogate these systems, right? This is an investigative piece. We're interrogating what's happening, you know, what's going from one place to the next. But we also didn't want to diminish the people, the characters in our story, to the worst moment that had happened to them. We recognize that an instance of brutality, an instance of missingness, an instance of violence is not just connected to the moment that it happens, but the many moments that came before it and the many characters and people who were a part of that. And we felt that, you know, even, you know, Shantae Bohannon's mom saying, like, Shantae being in the kitchen saying, like, look, Ma, I got a booty. Like, that's something that some of us can.
She
speak on it.
But seriously though, right? We know what it feels like to be in relationship. We know what it feels like to have a mama, auntie, cousin, father, sibling, best friend, right? And the more that we can introduce the reader into this kind of shared experience, have the reader also recognize themselves as the audience who was also impacted, I mean, it's extremely important.
And I think because of the values of our newsrooms, there was a belief in this project, but I think sort of what this is touching on is that impacted people should really be at the heart of the work that you're doing, and that I think we both deeply believe that you can reach them and you can involve them in audience work. And also at the end of the day, I think newsrooms are kind of grappling with this concept of being aware of the harm that we can cause as media to people. A big part of our work, Trina and I, we wanted to repair trust with families. Every family that we spoke to had extensive experience actually talking to media. And when we had gotten to them, they really didn't trust media anymore because journalists had come in, reported about, someone's sister or daughter being an alcoholic, what police had said. But no one had really talked to the families about who were these women, what had happened before they went missing. And we took a lot of time actually talking to them and having their wisdom and understanding of the problems that they've actually lived guide our work. And so that was really like a bedrock of the project. And I think that comes out of when you have newsrooms, like Southside Weekly, Invisible Institute, City Bureau, there's many others that are on the screen, like Block Club Chicago, Borderless Magazine, have really invested in being a part of communities, have invested in bringing community members into doing actual journalism. And I think that when you support newsrooms like that, you're going to have really impactful work. Mm-hmm. Because the people doing the work actually care. They've experienced it. They've seen how it's impacted their community. And oftentimes, survivors, when you talk to them, they want solutions. Yes, they're very disappointed in like structural failures, but people can find some level of healing in a small way from journalism that really centers them.
1,000%.
Yeah.
Thank you. What both of you shared and that what's being reported versus what's being lived, there's a huge difference, or there's been a huge difference in terms of media coverage. And so there's been a lot of studies around, what does harm look like? How do we repair trust and rebuild trust? A lot of that takes initiative. A lot of that takes different projects, different ways of engagement. And all of that takes money. I'm just making sure you get with the formula of this. Okay, so all of that takes money, but another key thing that you mentioned is you're bringing in the audience and making them a part of their story. There's a lot of these that are not our stories that are being told, but are actually real people, neighbors, friends, people down the street that are scared of not only law enforcement, but also of media. Mm. With this misperception, Mackenzie, of folks not truly understanding the financial health of organizations, not truly being able to see, for the most part, the cents and dollar amounts that go into every story, how do we bridge this gap of disconnect? What have you seen any solutions that have been played out anywhere else? If you can speak on that.
It's a hard question.
Yeah.
And I think it's against the backdrop of institutions of all kinds that have had plummeting trust now for decades or at a low point, whether it's universities, whether it's government, whether it's police, whether, I guess that's government, but whether it's journalism, et cetera. So, but according to our study, 88% of people in the Chicagoland area have never met a journalist. So I think it might start with, you're not a remote character. You're not a byline, faceless person who does stuff to people.
Right.
But you're actually a member of this community here, too. So I think that's one thing that we can do. Where's Tracy Bame? Right? Where's your little thing that you handed me? She was doing some retail politicking here earlier. She had like this grassroots marketing that she was doing for an event. And it's like that's the kind of thing that we need to get out from behind like the screen and get in the mass distribution and actually talk to people and get them to show up to our event and to see us in action and to be a beneficiary of our cause, to get into a discussion or a debate, to learn a little bit more about our craft. I mean, you know, it's staggering. 53% of Chicagoans trust local news, which we actually think is a pretty high number in comparison to national figures that are down in the low 40s. Well, what if they learned about the process that these people have gone through to get their stories, about the pains that they've taken to identify the signal from amid the noise, to feature the authentic stories, not just the legends, to put names and faces to these trends and movements, and to be able to feel it a little bit differently. I think we don't do a good enough job of that. So I think there would be a little bit more of the retail politicking and the grassroots marketing that Tracy inspired me with today that could be part of the solution.
Okay. Jackie, when it comes to keeping Southside Weekly alive, and when we think about philanthropic support, how do you think, I know you say you don't have solutions, they have solutions, they have money, but how do you think that, you know, what do you think it will take for philanthropy to want to not only just support with funding, but see sustainable and consistent funding going to a newsroom like yours?
I mean, we were just talking about trust in the media. Southside Weekly happens to have very good rapport with Southside communities. I would argue that. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that we're building like real working relationships with people. In many cases, we'll live in the same community or right next to each other. Or, you know, just the fact that we are place-based, about the Southside, from the Southside, all about the Southside, already gives us something that we have in common. We have different pathways for people to get involved at Southside Weekly. One of it is like a very fun initiative that we call Best of the Southside. It's a special issue that we've ran for more than 10 years, where we recruit writers from different neighborhoods so that they can write about the things in their neighborhood that, you know, they would like to promote or show some love to. And oftentimes, these writers, they do not come from journalism school. They do not necessarily have the credentials or the skills yet to write a story, but then we pair them up with an editor. You know, they go through a fact-checking process. They learn, you know, journalism guidelines that eventually gets them published. And I feel like this, you know, this initiative really makes people feel seen, feel heard, like they actually have a platform for their voices and their lived experiences. So I think, you know, that's just one of the many initiatives that I think really has helped us become trusted in this part of the city. We also, you know, work very closely with local artists, you know, local media makers, culture makers. And I think that goes a long way because, you know, many times we don't really have to try too hard to do outreach because people come to us on their own and we're willing to meet them where they're at. So if they don't have that specific skill that they're looking for or that they need to tell a story, we'll make sure to create a workshop around that or pair them up with the person who does have, you know, the knowledge that it requires. And through trial and error, through multiple drafts and a lot of meetings and, you know, a lot of processes that we go through, we get people published. Everyone from high schoolers to people from city colleges to our elders. Everybody has a voice. And, you know, we allow people to do a combination of creative writing if that's what they want to do. So we do have people who, you know, they just want their poetry published. In other cases, people will submit like a column or an op-ed. But, you know, we do try to focus on traditional reporting, making sure that all the facts are there. Every single story goes through a fact checker. So, you know, we really want to make sure that the content that we're putting out there is reliable, relevant, credible, and that it connects to people.
Great. Thank you, Jackie. I want to get in some questions from the audience that we've already received. This comes from Betsy Leonard of Kartemkund Films. Hey, Betsy. Where's Betsy? Hey. Betsy's question is, how do you partner with other independent media to magnify reach, engagement, and impact?
Ooh. Oh, my goodness. So much stuff. Okay.
I think you see one another as not competition, but how can you resource share in a genuine way?
Exactly.
I think one of the things I was really hearing when you were speaking, Jackie, is that trust and relationships are actually built over time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think collaborations are where you can pair up and just resource share between newsrooms, that your objective is actually just doing really good work and what the story is or what the project is. And I think when you focus on that, some of the other challenges can kind of melt away.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, for example, in Missing in Chicago, you know, we some of the things that we did were like the reading groups where, you know, we recognize it's a 7-part series and it's actually quite dark. Right. So bringing people together to read it over time. We, you know, we did a public newsroom at City Bureau at their offices. I remember learning like, OK, at the end, this is what you say. Like it was like a bit of development for us as journalists, as we are doing this different type of public facing kind of work. I think I moderated that public newsroom and it was a learning experience for me. So thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And then, oh my goodness, there was one more. Oh, the brunch, right? So there, at some point, you know, we brought folks together, sources to eat together. People who had never, oh, I'm sorry, before I even go there, with our reporting, we have an audio version of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really important for us that on the accessibility piece, but we have an audio team. And our audio team was like, oh, we're cool to step in. And so we recognize amongst our community, there are many people who have different types of resources
and skills.
And the only way that folks can engage with you in a meaningful way, and that's with collaborators, that's with source, learning what source is, what our audience, what is fact to them, and therefore what we must report on or help to dispel in some cases when there's misinformation out there. But a part of the importance of being in touch with each other on a regular basis, right? We must be in touch so that we can, when the opportunity presents itself, make space for a multimedia opportunity that can begin before whatever is published is actually published.
I would also add, you know, as director of journalism, media engagement at Public Narrative, I think Jamira Alexander is here. She's just went to the bathroom, of course, when I want to shout her out. But our president and executive director of Public Narrative, you know, we have just more recently acquired the Chicago Independent Media Alliance. Founded by Tracy Baim and steward before us by RICJ, was meant to bring together organizations that are like-minded, aka their bottom line was, we want to collaborate, we want to be in partnership, we want to do it for the better of our city, and that's through the activation that gets inspired and that gets encouraged by our plethora of readers. So, you know, there are also independent media resource organizations that are also hoping to add to the pot of extending the longevity of different organizations, but more importantly, the people that are actually doing the work. Mackenzie, I saw your head nodding a lot. I know you had something.
Yeah, I was thinking about what an amazing time this is,
right,
in the regards that you're talking about. I don't know if this is exactly the right analogy because I'm not like a I don't work at the Forest Service, okay?
Okay.
But, like, when there's a forest fire,
sure,
and the old-growth forest burns down, it, like, seems catastrophic, except for, in its place, all sorts of interesting new stuff grows. New animals get to come in, and the soil is re-nourished. And it doesn't take very long for new stuff to start sprouting, and it's different. Mm-hmm. It's different because there's new access to water and light and wind and all the rest of the things that were not present when the old growth forest was there. And I think we're kind of in that moment in time right now. And that's a good time to be an investor, by the way. So in Chicago, we have 108 independent local media sources that are doing original reporting.
That we know of.
That we know of. Thank you. And I'm sure it's many, many more.
Right.
And I again, this would have to have a that we know of clause to
right.
it. But I don't think 5 and 10 and 15 years ago the conditions existed whereby 108 organizations could thrive in that way. And because they're each expert in a different neighborhood, in a different subject matter, in a different cause, in a different et cetera, et cetera. And what we had before was these kind of monolithic, like a little bit of something for everybody, but not anything of great value to anybody kind of solutions. And so I just think like this is actually a pretty opportune moment. And what you were saying made me think of that.
Yeah. We are a little over time, but I want to have one last question for everyone to answer briefly. And that question, of course, is, you know, what makes you hopeful about the future of journalism in Chicago, local media, the people who are learning to get into the industry? What makes you hopeful about the future here in Chicago? I'll kick it off with Trina.
Oh. Okay, sounds good. So, you know, what makes me hopeful is this opportunity to speak with potential funders, people who are talking to young journalists, people who are journalists themselves or journalism adjacent about the importance of, you know, funders trusting the process of what we're working on and not trying to put the pressure on the productivity of the thing. You know, what Sarah and I did, you know, it was extremely heavy. And there were some times where we needed to really take a step back and rest. There was a moment where we had to take long walks, where we shed some tears. And our collaboration makes me extremely hopeful. And again, just the opportunity to share with you all the importance of, you know, investing in journalism, but not just the end product, but understanding what our process is, how we get to this place, and the fact that it really, really does take time and resources in order to get it done. So that's my hope.
Great. Sarah?
I think what makes me really hopeful is seeing that we have such a diverse group of independent newsrooms in Chicago that in all in their different way are really doing impactful work and actually involving Chicagoans and community members in doing that. I think that that is something that it takes resources and a lot of time, but it's really, really important and it has a huge impact. I mean, look at Southside Weekly. Also, shout out to Jackie who did Facebook Live. I work with a lot of fellows at City Bureau, and like that's the thing about the news ecosystem in Chicago is, I mean, like many industries, we all know each other and we actually all support one another and really collaborate. I mean, thinking about, I worked with fellows one time who were doing reporting on Little Village, and like Jackie just literally opened up the Facebook Live in a very important community Facebook group that Jackie has run. And I think that those types of collaborations that are so, they're small and they might not end up in an impact report, but they're like, they're really the bedrock of the work that we're doing. Because the local media in Chicago is really actually invested in Chicagoans. You know, everybody's always talking about Chicago's the greatest city in the world, obviously, duh. But it's because of the people, you know? Like, that's what makes this city great. Not really the institutions or people in power, these things. It's the people. And so I think when you invest in local media in Chicago and newsrooms like City Bureau, Invisible Institute, or Southside Weekly, you're really investing in people because they're at the heart of the work that we're doing. And the list could go on and on. You know, like I'm a huge Block Club Chicago stan. Hey, Shamus. You know, like
shout out feminism.
BGA. You know what I mean? But it just speaks to like I think the character of the way that Chicago as a city is really, in my opinion, doing the most innovative journalism work in the United States. And we're really setting the model for other cities. And I think when you invest in these newsrooms, you're investing that, ultimately spreading out.
Thank you. Jackie, how about you?
The young people give me a lot of hope. Like, we're in the age of citizen journalism. And if we think about all the media creators, content creators out there, how it's so many young people, right? This is the future, right? So I think it's important for us to, like, funnel these creative people, the content that they're producing, and making sure that, you know, it follows the tenets of journalism, that it is fact-checked, right, that we're not spreading misinformation, disinformation, and that we're also giving them the tools to do the multimedia work that they want to do. We are a newspaper, but it gives me hope that young people like to see their names printed on paper, you know? Because, like, we have this idea that the young people, you know, they only want to be, like, on Snapchat or Instagram or whatever, and that may be the case, but they also find value in having a paper copy of the thing that they just wrote. Seeing their name printed is super validating to them, and it really encourages them to keep creating content. So, yeah, the young people is what gives me hope. But also, you know, this new interest in supporting nonprofit journalism, it feels very new. For a while, like, the journalism industry felt really bleak. Like, it was uncertain. There were so many cuts, you know, job cuts, funding cuts. I've been in multiple newsrooms, including, like, the Tribune and the Sun-Times and other legacy media, where you can feel like there's this uncertainty, right? But at the same time, there's these young people on the sidelines doing their own thing, creating their own thing. So if we just nurture, you know, these kids, these young people, and create spaces for them to come together and produce, I think the future of journalism is bright.
Great. Thank you. Last but not least, Mackenzie.
Well, two answers. One comes from our study, and then one's a little bit more macro than that. I was amazed and really happy to see that 88% of Chicagoans seek out local news at least once a week. Now, that's different from paying for it, a topic that I think you've emphasized today. Yes. Thank you. But we don't have a demand problem, and we don't have an engagement problem, and that's great news. Also from the study, now the number one vehicle for delivery of local news is cell phones. It's the first time that that's been true, that the cell phone has been greater than the television or any other device. I also think that's great because cell phones are ubiquitous. Everybody has one, and so the lines of communication can remain open to those 88% of people and maybe the 12% that are living under a rock. At a more macro level, I'm hopeful as the world tilts more further toward autocracy, at least we have a local news ecosystem, whether you're paying for it or not. And our democracy has withstood some pretty good punches over the last 10 years, and we've stood up to that. And I honestly do believe that's down to people like the folks that are on this stage right here doing local journalism, keeping their fellow citizens and fellow residents informed, keeping them, giving them the way to understand how to go about their everyday lives, how to spend their money, how to get their health care, et cetera. Mm. And so, you know, those are the things that I think we're in a really good position to maintain with help from viewers like you. But it's a lot of signs for hope there.
Yeah, thank you. So what I've heard is it takes people, inclusive of young people, it takes trust, it takes resource, it takes collaboration, it takes interest, and it takes time. And in order to do all of that, it takes money to make all of those things happen. There is a formula that a lot of these newsrooms, many of them that you see represented on this this panel, folks that are within this audience, that have been formulaic as to building structures that are efficient and effective and scalable because they are dealing with fixed budgets. We can make that much more. We can make that more sustainable. We can make that thrive, and we can make that happen with our pockets. And it's clear to me that there is actual want to give, to want to see local journalism thrive. So let's activate that.
right? Let's activate that. We have Press Forward. We have other initiatives that these local newsrooms do internally to ask for money. Let's put the longevity and the sustainability of these newsrooms as a priority. So we allow for not just the folks in this room to understand what actually happens, what's the reality of not financially supporting organizations like these seen on the panel, but to the people, to the folks that read, so they understand that it's not all bells and whistles, rainbows and sunshine when it comes to giving them the news that they deserve, the news that they want, and the news that they need to thrive in Chicago. So I really think all four of you, Mackenzie Warren, Jackie Serrato, Trito Reynolds-Tyler, Sarah Conway, thank you so much.
And thank you, Olivia. Thank you for guiding us down that incredible discussion. This is City Club. This is Chicago, right? It's collaboration, not competition.
Right.
Like Sarah said, it's trial and error, multiple drafts, but eventually the success, like we've seen with all of you on this stage, and then taking that success, figuring out solutions to go lead the nation like Chicago has done for so long and will do for so many more years with all these young people leading by example for the right reasons. Thank you. Thank you all for being here. Thank you, MacArthur. Thank you, Community Trust. Thanks again, Olivia, for leading this discussion. Enjoy. We've got another half hour here at the experimental station. Enjoy. Take a look around. Have a drink. And we'll see you all back at City Club soon. Thanks.